Welcome to the PRI Review, brought to you by the Population Research Institute. I'm your host, Christopher Mannion. Proposal for a two-child policy in Indian state advances to the Legislative Assembly. A state in northeastern India has moved one step closer to implementing a population control policy, which would enact stiff penalties for government employees who have more than two children. The Indian state of Assam is considering a proposal to introduce a two-child policy for government employees. If adopted, the measure would make Assam the 12th state to have enacted such a policy. The proposal was released by the Assam Health and Family Welfare Department earlier this year. On August 31st, the state cabinet approved the draft proposal. The fate of the measure now lies in the hands of Assam's unicameral state legislature, where the ruling Bharatiya Janata Party, BJP, enjoys a wide margin majority. The Assam Legislative Assembly is expected to take up the proposal sometime during the ongoing legislative session, which began in early September. While certain provisions are expected to be contested by lawmakers, it appears unlikely that the two-child policy will be struck entirely from the bill. The proposal seeks to prohibit anyone who has had more than two children from becoming considered a candidate for a government job or office. The proposal would allow the government to pass restrictions barring persons with more than two children from running in local, municipal, or state elections and would automatically disqualify candidates nominated for government bodies and committees. For members of the Legislative Assembly, MLAs, elected representatives in Assam's highest legislative body, the policy would further authorize removal from office upon the birth of a third child. Persons will not be eligible to apply for government jobs and, for that matter, any kind of government service, including that of becoming members of the panchayat and civic bodies, said Assam Finance, Planning and Development, Health and Education Minister Himanta Biswa Sarma, according to the Indian Express. Sarma, a high-ranking MLA and cabinet member, has been responsible for spearheading the initiative. Assam is facing a dangerous population explosion, I'm quoting here, and this is one of the several measures we have proposed in the draft population policy, end quote. Sarma claims, using language popularized in the 1960s, by population bomber Paul Ehrlich, whose predictions of demographic doom have long been debunked. While several districts bordering Bangladesh and along the Brahmaputra River have seen large influxes of immigrants in recent years, the decades-long decline in the total fertility rate in Assam may have otherwise provided a demographic challenge for the state. According to the Ministry of Health and Family Welfare's 2015-16 National Family Health Survey, Assam's total fertility rate is 2.2 children per woman, which sits slightly below the replacement fertility rate for India as a whole. According to the most recent data from the United Nations Department of Economic and Social Affairs, in Assam's urban areas, the situation is even more dire. According to that data, total fertility in Assam's urban areas is 1.5, far below the replacement rate. Local government positions in the panchayats and municipal bodies are not only crucial local democratic institutions in India, they can also provide important career opportunities to certain segments of the population. Indian law requires a certain percentage of panchayat seats to be filled by women and members of protected scheduled castes and tribes. According to the government of Assam, the state employs over 25,000 men and women elected to a panchayat office. Now, the two-child policy would not only affect government employees. The proposal would also seek to tie development aid and government-subsidized local credit lending to meeting population targets and quotas. Panchayats that meet or exceed their targets in implementing the proposed population policy could be eligible to receive grants or other awards. Local self-help groups, so-called, community-based committees in India consisting of local business leaders and entrepreneurs that operate as private investors and credit lenders on the local level, would be eligible for special government grants if their members have no more than 2 children each. The 2 children norms will be applicable for also employment generation schemes like giving tractors, providing homes, and other government benefits, Sarma said, according to the NTA Post. Families with more than 2 children will also not be eligible for various benefits under different government schemes, the Indian Express quota, Sarma is saying. The policy further proposes to set aside 10% of government funding for panchayats to be used for performance-based disbursement for a number of project areas, including in the area of reproductive health. Rural health care workers active in providing contraceptives in India, such as accredited social health activists and Anganwadi workers, would also be provided with incentives to encourage adoption of family planning and spacing methods by eligible couples. Districts will be judged and awarded performance awards with grants on effective implementation of this policy, the draft proposal reads. The setting of quotas or targets to meet population goals, however, is a violation of the international consensus agreed to by 179 nations in the Program of Action at the International Conference on Population Development in Cairo, which stated, demographic goals, while legitimately the object of government development strategies, should not be imposed on family planning providers in the form of targets or quotas for the recruitment of clients. While the ICPD firmly established that family planning programs must be free of coercion and must allow couples to freely decide for themselves their fertility goals without the threat of government interference or even violence. An initial draft of the Assam Population Policy Proposal was released to the public for comments and feedback on March 27th. After receiving input from citizens, NGOs, and the media, the Assam State Cabinet revised the proposal, releasing a new draft on May 11th, but with only minor modifications to the original draft, retaining the two-child policy. Several other states across India have adopted two-child policies for government employees, including Rajasthan, Andhra Pradesh, Orissa, Maharashtra, Gujarat, Uttarakhand, and Bihar. Other states, including Himachal Pradesh, Madhya Pradesh, Haryana, and Chhattisgarh, have since repealed two-child policy laws. Now, two-child policies in India have had a wide impact on couples' rights to freely strive for their fertility goals. According to a recent study by Anukrati of Boston College and Abhishek Chavakarti of the University of Essex, at least 2% of couples in states where a two-child policy was implemented changed their fertility intentions in order to remain eligible for a possible future election to a panchayat post. The implementation of two-child policies in other states has given way to coercion as women seek to retain eligibility for themselves or their spouses for government employment. The policies have also encouraged some men to abandon their wives when they have exceeded their birth quota. To retain eligibility, many women resort to abortion. And as studies have shown, states where two-child policies are implemented are significantly more likely to see an increase in sex-selective abortion among upper-caste women. Menka, a woman elected to a Gram Panchayat in Orissa, was interviewed by Nirmala Bukh in her study, Law of the Two-Child Norm in Panchayats, Implications, Consequences, and Experiences. For Menka, the two-child policy was a potent motivator for seeking out a sex-selective abortion. When the doctors told her that she was pregnant with a boy, she decided to keep the pregnancy, but when she gave birth to a daughter instead, she lamented, "If I had known, I would have aborted, Menke told Buch. Now I have lost my position and there is no son. This has been your weekly briefing from the Population Research Institute at pop.org. We'll be right back. Do you want to win pro-life legislative and political battles? For years, PRI has been helping pro-life leaders on the ground around the world to win legislative and political battles in order to protect the lives of the unborn. And now we're asking for your help so we can continue this vital work. Let me tell you more. In a number of countries around the world, there are still pro-life laws on the books. But the Planned Parenthood Abortion Über Alles Malthusians are out there to get rid of those laws. Nearly 5 years ago, the Pontifical Council on the Family asked PRI to be the main organization to help the pro-life movements around the world to be more effective. In response to the Vatican's request, we created our Pro-Life Victory Seminars and our Pro-Life Strategy Guide. The seminars are grueling, demanding 12 to 14-hour intense working sessions. Only the most proven and successful leaders are invited to speak. Only the best and the most committed activists are invited to attend. To date, we have conducted 60 such sessions in 18 countries. We have trained more than 1,700 people who are serious about protecting the unborn in their respective countries. They have won some victories, but I'm not going to tell you about those because I don't want to put a target on the back of those leaders. I'm not going to tell you the names of their countries either because I don't want to make it even harder for them to do their work. But here's a hint. Most, though not all, have Spanish as their native tongue. It's no secret that south of our border, pro-abortionists are zeroing in on the existing pro-life laws in that part of the world. I cannot tell you the battle stories, although there are many, without endangering the victories of the leaders. I must ask you to take my word that some battles in some countries could not have been won without the training and support received from PRI. What kind of training am I talking about? Everywhere in the world, defenders of life need everything: strategic thinking skills, campaign skills, legislative skills, lobbying skills to protect their pro-life laws and to stop pro-death initiatives. Around the world, we found that the biggest thing lacking is know-how. By that, I mean political sophistication. Here in America, we've been fighting pro-life battles for almost 50 years, and while we haven't won definitively, we have learned a lot about how to fight, as well as how not to fight. One of the most important tools of our pro-life victory training is the manual that the trainees get to take home with them, the Pro-Life Strategy Guide, the guide to winning pro-life battles. Think of it as a field guide to activism. The guide is a compendium of know-how. It is 200 pages of distilled experience and wisdom, with step-by-step instructions about how to advance our issue in a representative landscape. Here's a small sampling of the know-how delivered in these training sessions. How to raise money, how to lobby legislators, how to write powerful pro-life advertising, how to effectively appear on TV and radio, how to enlist volunteers, how to get out the vote, and how to successfully debate pro-abortionists. All this and much, much more is covered in the training program and reinforced in the training guide. The first edition came out in 2012, but we are all out of them now. They have all been put in the hands of able pro-life leaders. So today we have had it revised and updated by two of the best and most successful activists in the Spanish-speaking world. Today the new PRI, Pro-Life Strategy Guide, the guide to winning pro-life battles, is ready to go to press. This is where you come in. Will you help us get it into the hands of the people who need it? It's in Spanish right now, and that's as it should be, because we distribute it throughout the Spanish-speaking world. The Vatican wants this field manual in every diocese in the world. Will you help me to fulfill that request? PRI has ordered 10,000 copies of the guide to be printed, enough for every student who will attend our training sessions for the next several years, along with all the actively pro-life bishops around the world. Just the printing alone will cost $50,000. The whole International Victory Training Program costs another $50,000, and that is in addition to the field guide. But right now we want to get those guides printed. So I turn to you because I know you understand its value. The cost comes out to about $5 per book, which is not very much considering the impact it can have and the lives it can save. With your tax-deductible gift of $50, PRI can put this guide into the hands of 10 in-country pro-life leaders. With a gift of $100, we can make sure that 10 friendly bishops get a copy to guide their strategic thinking in the protection of life. No gift is too small. If you can only spare $5, please send it today. Unborn babies around the world will be safer because of your sacrifice today. Can we count on you to help PRI to continue to train and empower the pro-life movement around the world on behalf of all those fighting to preserve pro-life laws around the world? Thank you. International Planned Parenthood Federation performs over 1 million abortions in 2016. Jonathan Abamonte reports. One of the world's most extensive and prolific abortion networks has passed a tragic milestone. In 2016, the International Planned Parenthood Federation, IPPF, for the first time reported in its history, aborted more than 1 million unborn baby boys and girls in a single year. The final death toll for 2016, 1,094,679 children lost through surgical or chemical abortion. Now that's roughly the equivalent of the population of Austin, Texas. IPPF also performed an additional 3.6 million abortion-related activities, including abortion counseling, consultation, and diagnostic procedures. These figures were recently released in IPPF's annual performance report 2016. IPPF, a London-based international pro-abortion organization, maintains a vast network of affiliates, member associations, across the globe that actively perform and/or advocate for abortion, comprehensive sex education, abortifacient methods of contraception, and other sexual and reproductive rights. IPPF maintains 142 member associations worldwide and is currently active in 171 countries. Planned Parenthood Federation of America is IPPF's member association in the United States. Founded in 1952 by the International Committee on Planned Parenthood, ICPP, and International Alliance of Pro-Birth Control Organizations, founded and largely financed by Margaret Sanger, IPPF has long promoted abortion and contraception. Annually, IPPF pours millions of dollars into its member associations and other like-minded organizations which operate on the country level to provide abortion and/or contraceptive services and to lobby for ever more lenient abortion laws. In 2016, IPPF awarded $68 million in grants to its member associations and other organizations, according to IPPF's Financial Statements 2016. The Population Research Institute's new 2017 edition map, International Planned Parenthood Federation Funding for Organizations Worldwide, shows how much IPPF has invested in organizations around the world since 2008, and you can find that map easily on our website at pop.org. IPPF claims that its network has contributed to over 950 legislative or policy changes worldwide since 2005. Legislative and policy changes supported by IPPF have covered a wide range of issues, including weakening or eliminating laws in defense of life, imposing explicit comprehensive sex education curricula in schools, attacking parental notification and minimum age consent laws, and ensuring public funding for abortifacient methods of contraception. In 2016, IPPF's member association in Guyana, the Guyana Responsible Parenthood Association, GRPA, successfully lobbied Guyana's courts to reinterpret the South American country's abortion law to allow mid-level health service providers, i.e. nurses, midwives, pharmacists, and rural non-physician clinicians, to provide chemical abortions up to 8 weeks gestation. Prior to the court ruling, only medical practitioners such as physicians or health providers under the direct supervision of a licensed medical practitioner were permitted to perform abortion. Following the court ruling, the number of chemical abortions provided by GRPA more than doubled and the number of abortion-related services increased by 68% overall. IPPF perennially trains youth activists to challenge abortion stigma, by which IPPF works to change public opinion on abortion by attempting to alter communities that value life and change them into communities where inhumane abortion procedures, such as chemical abortion, vacuum aspiration, and dismemberment abortion, are considered culturally acceptable. In its 2016 annual performance report, IPPF highlights the pro-abortion advocacy it effected through its member association in Pakistan, the Rahnuma Family Planning Association of Pakistan. Rahnuma trained youth activists to influence the debate on abortion on the local level by reframing abortion as both a public health and human rights issue. According to IPPF, Rahnuma's advocacy has reduced the level of stigma associated with the termination of the lives of unborn children. IPPF claims the organization contributed to more legislative and policy changes in 2016 than at any other point in its history, as securing legislative and policy changes is one of the priority objectives outlined in IPPF's 2016 to 2022 strategic framework. The organization's push for legislative and policy changes is likely to continue for years to come. IPPF has long targeted adolescents and young adults with their sex education programming and their contraceptive and abortion-related services by making them youth-friendly. IPPF's new strategic framework signals that the organization may target the youth even more actively going forward. The framework aims to reposition IPPF to transition from a youth-friendly to a youth-centered organization by prioritizing and scaling up comprehensive sex education. And that's the code word for abortion, sodomy, and all the rest. In 2016, IPPF significantly increased its reach among the youth in the domain of sex education. According to the Financial Statements 2016, over 28.1 million adolescents and young adults were given comprehensive sex education programming through one of IPPF's member associations, a 9% increase over the number of youth receiving such education from IPPF in 2015. On January 23, 2017, President Donald Trump signed a presidential memorandum reinstating the Mexico City policy, a long-standing fixture of U.S. foreign policy under pro-life administrations. The Mexico City policy prevents certain U.S. governmental funding for foreign non-governmental organizations that perform or promote abortion as a method of family planning. Under the Mexico City policy, IPPF and other foreign pro-abortion organizations that refuse to stop performing or funding abortion are largely ineligible to receive funding from the U.S. government via global health assistance. The newly reinstated Mexico City policy has been renamed the Protecting Life and Global Health Assistance Policy. Other countries have attempted to bridge the funding gap left by the Mexico City policy for pro-abortion organizations. A campaign spearheaded by the government of the Netherlands called She Decides has raised over 300 million, that's 260 euros, million, for abortion, contraception, and sexual and reproductive health programs. Major donors to the She Decides campaign have included the governments of the Netherlands, Denmark, Belgium, Sweden, the UK, Canada, Norway, Australia, and others. Now, the government of Sweden has taken further steps with the aggressive approach of vowing to defund all organizations that agree to abide by the Mexico City policy. The Swedish International Development Cooperation Agency, SIDA, has further signaled it will freeze all aid to foreign NGOs that agree to abide by the Mexico City policy. Most recipients of U.S. government global health assistance are required to abide by the Mexico City policy. According to U.S. government senior administration officials, the new policy applies to more than $8.8 billion in U.S. foreign aid. It is unclear how significant the impact of the Swedish government's new policy will be on crucial health services provided by foreign NGOs and the poor in developing countries that rely on them. This has been your weekly briefing from the Population Research Institute at pop.org. We'll be right back. By now, we all know that Planned Parenthood is accused in the United States of allegedly violating the law by, among other atrocities, selling baby body parts. But what you might not realize is that Planned Parenthood's affiliates, Planned Parenthood Federation of America, PPFA, and International Planned Parenthood Federation, IPPF, are still getting away with murder overseas. Around the world, and especially in Latin America, the baby-killing giant shades the truth about its abortion-related activities. It runs roughshod over local anti-abortion laws and violates local pro-life sentiment, all with seeming impunity. But not anymore. With your tax-deductible gift, PRI will throw the book at the abortion giants overseas, just as pro-life groups are doing here at home. Did you know that PPFA spends about $38 million a year lobbying to legalize abortion in countries around the world? If they're successful, they can kill as many, if not more, babies overseas as they do in the United States. But there's a hitch. Because abortion remains illegal in most Latin American countries, neither IPPF nor PPFA is eligible for government funding for abortion-related activities as they are in the United States. So PPFA, IPPF, gets around it as only they know how to do, by lying. With a wink and a nod, they disguise the programs they are funding as, quote, education or health programs, women's right, human rights protection or promotion, and anti-discrimination initiatives aimed at protecting vulnerable groups such as women or LGBTs, that means lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender," end quote. Catholic bishops throughout Africa and Latin America complain about this. They call it ideological imperialism, but their voices are not heard in Congress because America's bishops depend on billions in government funding for their own charities. They don't want to bite the political hand that feeds them. Now, PRI receives no government funding, so we aren't hampered by golden handcuffs. That's why your tax-deductible gift to PRI is so important today. As the lead group investigating Planned Parenthood's activities overseas, PRI's Latin American office has uncovered PPFA's thinly disguised efforts to undermine pro-life laws and legitimate abortion on demand. But we've only found the tip of the iceberg, and there is more work to be done, work that we can't do alone. Your tax-deductible gift will help PRI hire a seasoned pro-life legal team to help us expose, investigate, and prosecute Planned Parenthood's affiliates everywhere they prey on women, especially overseas. Together, we'll expose, investigate, and prosecute PPFA and IPPF everywhere it tries to hide the truth. This two-prong attack, complementing the hearings taking place in Washington, will force Planned Parenthood to fight on two fronts. What better way to strike a blow against the real Planned Parenthood, the one we saw in all those horrific videos, than to come at them here and abroad? So please make a tax-deductible gift to support this and all of PRI's baby-saving efforts around the world. Yes, they're powerful. Yes, they're big. But remember, David and Goliath. The bigger they are, the harder they fall. Once more into the breach. Former Senator Rick Santorum spearheads pro-life initiative. Jonathan Abamonte reports. When they returned from their Labor Day recess, pro-life lawmakers launched a last-ditch effort to repeal and replace Obamacare and defund Planned Parenthood before the end of the 2017 fiscal year. On September 13th, Senators Lindsey Graham, Bill Cassidy, Dean Heller, Ron Johnson jointly unveiled their plan for health care reform. Former Senator Rick Santorum has been instrumental in spearheading the initiative and working with members of Congress to adopt the policies outlined in the bill. In full disclosure, Senator Santorum does have a relationship with the insurance industry. The proposal provides an innovative solution for health care reform by subsidizing health insurance through the allocation of block grants to state governments. The measure will give states more say on health care policy, like the House bill and the failed Senate bills proposed earlier this year. This Graham-Cassidy bill would protect unborn lives and the conscience rights of millions of Americans. The proposal would block the vast majority of federal funding for Planned Parenthood for the period of 1 year. As the nation's most prolific abortion provider, Planned Parenthood terminates the lives of more than 320,000 unborn children every year in the United States. For the past 2 years, the organization has been the center of controversy surrounding their alleged trafficking and sale of the body parts of aborted babies. The Graham-Cassidy proposal would even go one step further than the Senate bills from earlier this year by also prohibiting tax-free contributions to health savings accounts, HSAs, from being used to pay for health care plans that include abortion coverage. Senate lawmakers have until September 30th to pass the bill for the 2017 fiscal year. If lawmakers fail to meet the September 30th deadline, they would still be able to bring up the same bill after the 2018 fiscal year appropriations bill is passed, but the pro-life provisions in the bill would have to wait for another year before being implemented. As a reconciliation bill, the Graham-Cassidy measure only needs 50 votes to pass in the Senate. However, both Senators Susan Collins and Rand Paul have already come out against the bill, leaving Republicans with no margin for error in garnering support. Senator John McCain, Republican of Arizona, who sank the Senate's efforts to pass the so-called skinny bill in July, has expressed optimism for the bill, but has fallen short of endorsing it. The Congressional Budget Office plans to have a preliminary assessment of the bill by sometime next week, but count on the fact that their efforts will be in error. They always are. Now, on the issue of health policy more generally, the Graham-Cassidy bill proposes to give the states more say in setting the rules for health care policy, permitting states to apply for waivers on several ACA regulations. States would be able to decide if they want to reduce costs by allowing health insurance companies to charge more for pre-existing conditions or for other reasons, and would allow states to set the minimal essential benefits that insurers must provide. States would be able to manage their health care plans more conservatively or liberally, as the political climate may dictate, with some left-leaning states likely to transition to a single-payer option under the Graham-Cassidy bill, according to Avik Roy in an article published with Forbes. Senator John Kennedy, Republican of Louisiana, has proposed an amendment to the Graham-Cassidy bill prohibiting states from using block grants to create single-payer systems. The Graham-Cassidy bill would increase the annual maximum tax-free contribution individuals and families can make to their HSAs. Citizens over 55 years of age would also be able to make catch-up contribution to their HSAs. The proposal would eliminate the individual and employer mandates of Obamacare and would repeal Obamacare's medical device tax. Unlike the House bill, the Graham-Cassidy bill would not penalize individuals for a lapse in coverage, and a policy change that is helpful, ensuring that low-income or unemployed Americans are not penalized, but one that could also increase the cost of health insurance overall. Under the Graham-Cassidy proposal, block grants given to the states for the purpose of subsidizing individual and small group health plans would gradually replace the ACA individual premium tax credits, cost share reduction payments, and Medicaid expansion. The Graham-Cassidy bill would allow states to introduce high-risk pools to help individuals with expensive health conditions gain access to affordable insurance. However, states would have to elect to create high-risk pools with the block grants provided to them by the federal government, and it is uncertain whether such pools would be sufficient to cover at-risk individuals. A nationwide entitlement-based high-risk pool would assure that persons with expensive health conditions are able to receive affordable care. Like the ACA, the Graham-Cassidy bill prohibits insurance companies from turning away applicants for pre-existing conditions or current health status. Individuals will also be eligible to remain on their parents' health care plans until 26 years of age. The bill will provide more equitable distribution of federal funding for health care across the states. Under the ACA, federal funding is matched to the state funding, allowing wealthier states to gain access to proportionally more federal funding than less wealthy states. The Senate proposal appears poised to improve financial accountability for health care. According to Alan Greenspan, former chairman of the Federal Reserve, in a released statement, and I quote, "Getting money and decision-making out of Washington and into the hands of governors who are legally bound by balanced budget amendments and their state constitution is a giant step forward." The bill would end limitless entitlement spending authorized under the ACA, forcing states to spend only money budgeted for, encouraging states to find more efficient and cost-effective ways to spend taxpayer dollars. With the elimination of cost-sharing payments and premium tax credits, however, it remains unclear how the proposal will impact the health insurance market, particularly for low-income Americans. There could also be hidden risks to local state economies and national cohesion by allowing states to so differentially regulate on a large sector of the economy. While Americans continue to debate the merits and drawbacks of the Graham-Cassidy health care reform proposal, all Americans can agree that any health care policy must, and in a fiscally responsible way, be attentive to the health care needs of all Americans, most especially the sick, the poor, and the unborn. Laws to close loopholes in the ACA are greatly needed to protect the conscience rights of millions of Americans from being forced to purchase or to subsidize through federal taxes health care plans that include abortion coverage. Under the Affordable Care Act, ACA, federal subsidies can be used to finance health care plans that include coverage for elective abortion, contrary to long-standing federal policy under the Hyde Amendment, which prohibits this practice for federal appropriations to the Departments of Health and Human Services, HHS. Despite pro-life opposition at the time the ACA was being debated in 2010, that's Obamacare, by the way, pro-abortion Democratic lawmakers ultimately blocked the bipartisan Stupak-Pitts Amendment, which would have mandated Hyde-like protections for the ACA, and a very grave betrayal of the bishops who supported constantly the Obamacare proposal because they thought that this Stupak-Pitts Amendment would pass. Instead, the ACA stipulates that federal money should be deposited in an account separate from the abortion portion of the health care plan and itemized as a separate charge on the customer's bill. Pro-lifers have long criticized the maneuver as little more than an accounting gimmick, allowing for federal funds to nonetheless subsidize health care plans that pay for abortion procedures. In 2014, the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, found that several insurance companies were not itemizing the abortion surcharge. The GAO found that the Washington Health Benefit Exchange was not even collecting an abortion premium as stipulated by the ACA and was forced to modify their billing practices and notify the IRS of the amount the exchange owed for failing to segregate funds. While the Hyde Amendment prohibits federal funding for health care plans that include abortion coverage in all 50 states, the ACA forced several states to pass laws in order to opt out of funding abortion plans in the exchanges. Only 25 states so far have laws in place to restrict ACA federal subsidies and premium tax credits for insurance plans that include abortion coverage. In some states, every health care plan offered through the exchanges includes coverage for elective abortion. The Graham-Cassidy bill, by way of contrast, would prevent funding for abortion in health care plans in all 50 states. It would protect the conscience rights of Americans living in states such as California, New York, and Oregon, whose state governments have passed laws forcing insurance companies to include coverage for elective abortions in all state-specific health care plans sold in these states. Will the Graham-Cassidy bill succeed in a politically divided Senate? Stay tuned. This has been the PRI Review from pop.org. Thanks for listening.